Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor and star of all my children, as Charlie.
Charlie Brent.
And now.
Yes. Those were the days.
That's when you cut your teeth, man. That was right there, right?
Innocence. Doing soap operas.
You were innocent. Yeah. You didn't know.
I was like 19 years old when that started.
And I got to tell you, some of the stories you told me about your New York City adventures were wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Not meant to be talked about here, but I will say that, you know, you had a good time when you were there.
I had a really good time.
You really did.
I was young, innocent. It was old New York before it's become what it is now.
Yes.
It felt like a much smaller city back then.
And,
it was great.
Well, let me finish the intro. So star of All My Children is Charlie Brent, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and of course, your favorite Eternal Ensign, Garrett Wong.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're here. We are ready to go. Is that a new background?
I used that before, but you know what? This is a new t-shirt.
Hey,
actually, now that I'm looking at what's happening.
So here we go. I have old shirt and Robbie has new shirt.
I have a new one. So on the front, it says the Delta Flyers in cool block letters.
Yeah.
But on the back, I pulled this
back
over.
Yeah, let's show
on
the back.
Back. So here you see
it's a Star Trek chevron.
It's the Star Trek chevron with every title,
single episode,
of every
title.
Episode, creating the chevron
in order from
the pilot until the very last episode.
Woo!
It's a very cool design.
Yeah.
And I can't believe all of the episodes are on the back of the shirt and the Delta Flyers logo. We've got it in regular crew neck.
Yes.
Unisex.
And
we
have
also
ventured
made this
into V-neck. We ventured into V-neck.
V-neck. There's the V-neck.
Yes.
Which is kind of nice.
And there are,
again, the back, that design is so cool to me. It's like every Star Trek fan, every Voyager fan needs to have this shirt because it's super cool.
Well, typically, I don't really like V-necks so much, but we do get requests for them. I do know that there's certain individuals that prefer V-neck, and therefore we have V-neck now. So all you V-neckers out there, get your shirt.
Yeah, there's some really cool merch in there. We had some friends over yesterday and we were all having a little afternoon coffee. And I looked around and it was like, we were all drinking out of Delta Flyers mugs, like the Christmas mug and there's
of
coffee in that Nebula mug. And I was like, look at all this merch. We're using it.
Wouldn't that be funny? At some point in the future, there's not even a podcast anymore. It's just merch. It's just the Delta Flyer store. And we have are just extensive lines of everything. The Delta Flyer.
I love our stuff. It's like, it's great for the fans because there's real story and character in all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool design like this one with all the titles. And then there's also a sense of humor. Like I like some of our mugs, the cartoon characters, the Christmas mug, it's just fun to see the Voyager characters and stories with some sense of humor in the merch. So
agreed.
And I've got my resident alien camera team hat on today. This is season 2 camera team for Resident Alien. They made up some hats.
I like that. Is that a skeleton or a stick figure?
Well,
what is that up there?
There's a brand, Arc'teryx.
Okay.
The brand Arc'teryx is very popular with the film crews up there in Vancouver because it's cold and rainy.
Oh, right.
So this is a spin on the Arc'teryx logo,
but it's got
an alien head on it instead.
Oh.
It's like the alien skeleton.
I love it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
I love it.
Again, sense of humor. I like stuff.
So shall we tell our listeners where we can get our merch?
Yes, of course we should.
Okay. So that web address is... TheDeltaFlyers.org. O-R-G.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, it's cool. What?
Yeah, just click on shop, is, right?
Yeah,
you have to click on the shop, and then you'll see all our stuff.
See all the merch. A lot of stuff has sold out. They were limited edition. So if you're curious, if you're interested at all, you should definitely check it out and don't hesitate because we don't make tons of all of these things. So
yeah,
you want to get it before it's sold out.
Yeah.
But
okay,
I think this shirt's cool. We hopefully people will be grabbing this up because it'd be fun to see this around walking around cons and things like that. It's a mm-hmm. great shirt.
Yep.
Well, good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually, I've seen a lot of these shirts recently because you've been luxuriating in your lovely new remodeled home in Utah. Yes. But I have been in Los Angeles. I've been in Los Angeles and I've been going to all the away missions for the Voyager documentary. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I did, let's see. I did two Paramount Studios tours in the
How was that?
Well, I'll tell you, I go up to the front gate and one of the guys that was there back when we were there is still at the front gate.
Oh, so my God.
I handed him my ID. He's like, Garrett. I'm like, oh, my God. So that was kind of cool.
Wow.
But we did run into a little bit of a mishap because, you know, Lolita and I met some fans and we started walking with those fans towards Hart Building, and we were showing them Hart Building and Cooper Building where everything or all the writers were or the offices were. And then we just sort of cut right and we just started going, heading to the northwest portion of the lot and with the goal of, you know, rounding around stage 16 and then coming to 8 and 9. That was our goal. But before we can get to stage 16, we realized there was one fan that we had missed that they had called in saying, oh, I'm just coming on the lot now. So as we were heading back towards the front gate, we got stopped by security. And so the security guy goes like, yeah, what are you guys doing? And we're like, oh, yeah, we're just kind of going around on a quick tour and everything. And he's like, well, I need you to stay right here. And he starts radioing in to his supervisor.
What?
Yes. So the day shift security supervisor comes over. And he's aggro as, I mean, he's just like, no unauthorized tours of no private tours. Pre-pandemic, that'll be fine. But right now with pandemic, nothing is allowed. And on top of that, have you guys been taking photos? You can't take photos of any sets or anything live. And it, I mean, he was just, I might have checked all your phones. I mean, he got so in our face. And we try to tell him we were with, you know, we have drive-on passes through Dave Zappone, who is 455 Films. And his office is on the Paramount Studios lot. So he's the one that called the drive-ons for everybody. But he wasn't with us yet. He was in the office setting up the sizzle reel to show the fans that had contributed to the,
doing the tour.
Yeah, do the tour. And so this guy basically said, well, you cannot be unchaperoned. Whoever called the drive-on has to be with you at all times. And I said, so our plan is to go to the office first. He was like, nope. And then we're going to go to lunch. Nope. Okay, so what are we supposed to do? Leave the lot now.
What?
And I, oh, yeah. Oh, totally. And then you have to have a Paramount employee, at which point Lolita said, I was a Paramount employee. And I said also, yeah, 21 years ago, I also was a Paramount employee. I said that to the guy. He wasn't laughing. And he literally said, no, you need to leave immediately. All of you. Now. And then Lolita was like, hold on, I'm going to call. So she's calling Dave and she starts to walk away. And the main security guy turns to the underling and says, follow her now. Make sure she doesn't go. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was like Counterpoint.
The episode probably Counterpoint was a quiet lot because nobody's going into the offices.
It is a ghost town. We walk past the Roddenberry Building. There is no production office that has an office in the Roddenberry Building. It's completely vacant. So pandemic killed everything like that. Yeah. That is almost you're right. It's like a ghost town. And it's like, what are we filming? What are we taking pictures of? There's nothing going on this side, this lot. Like, are you kidding me? And so he was so aggro. So then I was like, okay, we could either go toe to toe with this guy, you know, or I can try to sweet talk him, you know? And I was like, yeah, you know, we didn't know what was going on with these new policies. And he's like, who's the person that called the drive on 455 Films? He's like, who's that? They're over at the Dreyer Building. It's for the Voyager documentary. And I said, you know, I brought up the fact that, we're just going to take him over to 8 and 9, which is right by his office. And that's where LZ and Ed were. So I threw that out there. Right. And he goes like, yeah, Yeah, I go, you know LZ, right? I go, how long have you been working here? It's like, well, I was here in 91. I said, oh, okay, so then you definitely know everybody from Voyager, including probably myself, because I had sunglasses on, right? Right? And then he was like, oh. So he took a little bit of a pause there, and I kept talking to him, and slowly the ice caps started to melt. Slowly but surely. And then Dave Zappone walks up, right? And he walks up like John Wayne. And he goes, and the first thing he says is, so I hear there's a problem here. And he says it with a very aggressive tone. And I was like, oh my God, are you going to ruin my 20 minutes of buttering this guy up? And you're totally going to. But then Dave, I gave Dave a look, and he looked back at me, and he got the message. He's like, so what's going on, officer? He's like, what's going on, you know, to the security guy? And he's like, well, you can't have them, you know, they have to be escorted. They have to be whatever, this and that. And Dave was like, I thought I had cleared everything. And he's like, well, you have to have someone with the group at all times. And then because I had buttered him up, and because Dave didn't stay aggressive and he backed off.
Right.
I said, is it possible that we now all go to Dave's office now that Dave's here to look at the scissor reel? And he's like, yeah, that's okay. And then after that, is it possible that we go to the commissary and have lunch with these fine folk who've been waiting around for a while? He goes like, yeah, I'll let you do that too. So he finally, dude, I was sitting there going, I can't believe we're about to be booted off of the Paramount Studios lot. So that was tour number one.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they can be really, really sticklers, but we got by it. We, you know, and so that was, but we also did tours to Santa Monica Pier, where we saw where you guys filmed Future's End, where I was so jealous that all of you got to go down on the Santa Monica
Pier. That was fun.
Yeah, and I was stuck on the dadgum ship. And then we went to the Japanese Gardens, where you guys filmed. Oh, you didn't film that scene.
No. I did.
Did you?
Well, I filmed something at the Japanese Gardens. One of the first season episodes.
Okay, but not the one with the Species 8472, though.
No.
It was something else. But yeah, Japanese Gardens in the Valley. We also went to Cal State Northridge. We went to the Getty Center. Vasquez Rocks. That was awesome.
I have to say,
because I said we should have RockCon, an outdoor convention sitting amongst the rocks at Vasquez Rocks. We had so much fun. Oh yeah. It was amazing. I was absolutely just, it was the perfect temperature. It wasn't hot. It was breezy. And we had a good group of fans there. And we just had a great time sitting up in the rocks, joking around, talking and everything. So, I had a wonderful time on the away missions. So that's what I've been doing. Nice. But this week, what we are doing right now, we have digressed quite a bit so far. We are going to be watching the episode Dark Frontier parts 1 and 2, which they didn't separate. This is interesting because they kept everything together. Usually when we have two parters, they're basically separate and you have a to be continued, but this one's all one all together. So,
and was it aired that way? Was it originally aired that way, or did they just do that in the reruns, put it together?
I don't know. That's a really, really good question.
I
don't know. I mean, someone has that answer.
We'll figure it out.
I think some fan may even have that answer.
As we dive into it. Maybe we'll remember as we get
into it. We'll see. All right. So Robbie and I are going to go watch this episode. We will be right back with our recap and discussion of Dark Frontier parts 1 and 2. All right, everyone, we are back from watching Dark Frontier parts 1 and 2.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Woo.
I did not remember this episode, really. I mean, vaguely. But I definitely didn't remember like a movie length episode of our show. Didn't remember a two-parter.
No.
That was played as one. It was a lot.
You know what? This could have been a movie. This could have been a Voyager film quite easily. And just the way, the tone of this film and everything, it just seemed very, very grandiose and very theatrical, very movie-like. Yes. So
absolutely.
All right. With that being said, let us begin our normal way. I'm going to start with my haiku of Dark Frontier parts 1 and 2. Here we go. Plan to steal Borg tech. 7, coerced by the Queen. Don't mess with Janeway.
Oh my gosh. That's good.
Okay.
It's good for a big movie. You got it.
For two episodes crammed into one big episode.
To get that into a haiku.
That's difficult. I got to say.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Let me hear this wonderful, wonderful limerick.
Here we go with our limerick for Dark Frontier.
Yeah.
It goes a little something like this. Heading home, some Borg tech would be vital. The crew's mission feels quite suicidal. The Borg wants Seven to stay, but Janeway always gets her way. When it comes to Queen, Janeway holds the true title.
Oh, yes. Very good. Hey, we both use Borg tech, too, without consulting each other. Did you notice that? I thought that was kind of cool. So, very good job on the limerick. All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
I got to give props to Rebecca on that one. Okay. I really do.
You're going to admit to it on this one?
That was Rebecca. I was completely stumped. I'm like, this is so overwhelming. I don't know where to begin.
I changed
a word or two just to try to, participate.
To put your stamp on it.
But I was like, I don't know where to start.
I can already just picture you going, honey, I think you need to tackle this for me now.
Help.
Help me.
Help. Help.
He's drowning in limerick. Okay.
All right.
Let's do it.
So this is a big episode. So I'm not going to go into all the actors' credits this time.
Okay.
I'm just going to mention. So this was written by Brandon Braga and Joe Manosky. We know those guys very well.
Yes.
This was directed by two directors. The first half was directed by Cliff Bohl. Mm-hmm. And then the second half by Terry Wendell, who was a relatively new director. And by the way, Cliff Bohl directing this time, this was his very last episode of our show.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
Cliff was an old timer with Trek and with television. And I remember he was retiring. He basically went into retirement during our show. And so this was his last episode. Yeah.
Oh, man. And we didn't guess. We were going to, typically we.
No.
Try to guess.
I know. We didn't think about it.
I could have had a chance to throw out Cliff Bohl. I could have thrown Cliff Bohl.
I know.
Dadgummit.
It's his last one.
Okay.
Our guest stars. Susanna Thompson as the Borg Queen. So it's not Alice Krieg, who was established in the film.
Yeah,
it's Susanna Thompson, who I thought did a great job. We have Seven of Nine's parents. Dad playing Magnus Hansen is Kirk Bailey.
Okay.
And playing Aaron Hansen is Laura Stepp.
Okay.
We have Naomi Wildman making a beautiful appearance in the episode. I loved her scenes, as I always do, Scarlett Palmer's. And then we have, as co-stars, we have Annika is played by Caitlin Peterson.
Okay. Young Annika.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Young Annika. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's our guest stars there.
Okay. Cool.
Great. Okay. So we open on a Borg ship.
Yeah.
And
this is Borg POV.
I made a note that the Borg POV is shot with, I think this was shot with a mesmerizer lens, which is kind of it's a trick lens that was very popular in the 90s.
Okay.
And nowadays is a bit dated. We actually tried to use that lens. A director tried to use that lens on Resident Alien recently.
Yeah.
And it just felt dated. We took it out because I was like,
look at that.
So when I was looking at this, I was like, oh, it's the mesmerizer lens. That's, which was so cool in the 90s because it was kind of it was trendy, I guess you could say.
That director wasn't Cliff Bohl's son, was it?
No. But for Cliff Bohl to use that lens was totally acceptable and very modern in the 90s.
Yes.
Whereas it's interesting to look at things now that become dated. It doesn't seem like that long ago that we made our show, but it was 27 years ago. And
all right. Well, then let me
dated stuff.
Yeah. Well, Robbie, let me ask you this then. If a mesmerizer lens is considered dated now, how would you, as a modern day director, achieve the same effect as what the mesmerizer lens was used for back then in the 90s?
Probably you would film it without any treatment. You'd film it straight and you would dial in a more specific and unique and original kind of look in post-production.
Okay.
Because now in post, those kind of visual effects enhancements are very common, mm-hmm. and they were not back then. So right. doing it with that fan, you know, the trick lens mm-hmm. was a common thing back then because mm-hmm. you couldn't afford to do it all that in post.
Okay. But now it's cost effective. It's more cost effective. Okay.
Well, I don't know that it's more cost effective, but it's more desirable because then when you get into post, you can try a few different versions and dial in something that feels unique to your show instead of, there's that lens that 150 other shows used last year.
Gotcha.
You know, that everybody has the same look. You can create something that's unique. That's a kind of mashup of different ideas. So gotcha. That's probably what you do now.
Okay.
Anyway. So we're walking down the hallways in the board ship, walking down the halls.
And they've detected Voyager. Yes. There are 143 life forms. So once again, we get a head count on how many people are on Voyager.
Which is, I haven't tracked it, but I feel like it's very random. Like it's somewhere in the 130s, 140s, 150s, but it kind of moves around. I wonder if they were really keeping track of that number. I don't know the answer to that, but I also
wouldn't
made
that
a
be
note-
funny if they're a sub production assistant and that was their job. It's like you well, must keep the, track
the
of
script
the
coordinator's
life.
Job. Yeah. That might have been Lolita's job. She was script coordinator. Mm-hmm. She might have been. They might have sent her, you know, a note saying, "Hey, can you track the number of, you know, keep that information so that we make sure all the scripts are the same." It could have been the writer's assistant or the script coordinator, but probably not the writers. They usually on that kind of thing, just sort of guess in the ballpark and then have the detail cleaned up by your coordinator or your assistant. Yeah.
Okay.
They find us on their Borg monitor, which I thought was a goofy, it looked like a Captain Proton monitor to me, actually.
It kind of did. It wasn't as expensive as you would expect, but again, budgetary restraints. But really, they're preparing for a simulation right now, and we see these Borg in the hallways. And I think what's unique about this opening scene is that we never do see their POV this much, this long. No. You know, you see them kind of walking around, but then for them to see their readout of us, you know, and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to strong arm us. They're trying to assimilate us. And then Janeway's playing hardball. And we also see Keith. We see Sue's boyfriend Keith as one of the Borg. And it's so funny because we know them so well that we can pick them out as stand-ins or extras on our show. But no matter how much junk you put on their face, we still know who they are.
Absolutely.
So in a second, split second, there's Keith again. Yeah. So and once again, you know, Janeway says she can match their firepower. And what's so cool is that a new strategy occurs. We beam a photon torpedo aboard, set on a timer to detonate, and the entire vessel is destroyed. Now, that vessel itself, I've never seen a Borg vessel of that shape. That looks like a Borg freighter, maybe.
It was like a Borg shuttle or something, or a freighter or something. Yeah, it was a weird shape.
Mm-hmm.
And when it blows up the whole thing, we come back to the bridge, and we realize that Janeway did not intend to blow up the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Chakotay brings it up. She goes, weren't we just supposed to disable that, that vessel? And Seven says that because the torpedo detonated nearby the Borg power matrix, that caused a chain reaction. And everybody and everything was destroyed. Unfortunately, they didn't want to have that. But Janeway does order a salvage operation. She says, look, you know, and I love how she goes, I don't know about the rest of you, but I feel lucky today. So there's been a lot of gambling, you know, references throughout Voyager in this last stretch of episodes.
Fort Knox comes up. Money analogies come up a lot.
Yes.
We go to the cargo bay. There's debris everywhere. Janeway and Chakotay are looking at it. I thought this was going to be a flirty scene.
Yeah, it really wasn't so much of a flirty scene. Yeah, we have 8 kilotons of debris to sort through. We've got 2 power nodes. We've also found a dozen plasma conduits, or as I like to say, plasma conduits. Exactly. And then B'Elanna found a transwarp coil. And, you know, Janeway says to Chakotay, look, we've added 2 years to our journey just to avoid the Borg. And at that moment, the doctor arrives very excited with a servo armature from a medical repair drone, which has a laser scalpel, a biomolecular scanner, a micro suture. It is the Borg medical Swiss Army knife.
That's what I wrote down. Basically, a Swiss Army knife for doctors.
Yeah.
He's like a kid at Christmas, I wrote down. Yeah, he's so excited.
He is so happy.
And and B'Elanna and Seven are trying to activate the transwarp coil, but they just can't do it.
Right.
And then Seven shows Janeway some data nodes that they found in the debris. Mm-hmm. And Seven says there's lots of information on this.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, Chakotay says something earlier like, oh, you must be about to drop a bombshell. She's like, how do you know that? And he goes, well, because you're fiddling with your comm badge, and that's always a sign. I was like, I wrote down, I call bull.
Yeah.
He's never fidgeted with her. Like, that's never happened.
Yeah, that's in my video reaction. I was like, as in never?
As in never done that before.
Never, ever.
And then she does it there for him to talk about. And then she does it at the end of the scene. But she never does it again in the episode. It was like a one scene bit. Exactly. Which is fine. I love a one scene bit. Just don't pretend like she does it all the time. Don't say, oh, you always do that, because she's never done it.
Yeah. Anyway, the fans are smarter than that, guys. Yes. You know, okay. We're going to know. Everyone's going to know. That's not the right deal. All right.
We go to mess hall. There's Tom and Harry coming in celebrating, you know, this debris collection, defeating the Borg. Mm-hmm. They're celebrating, order some beer.
Yes, the beer was ordered, but it was Harry's idea to beam the photon torpedo onto the Borg vessel. Yeah. I was very impressed. I was like, wow, good job, Harry.
Good job, Harry. Yeah. I agree. And Tom's basically like talking pretty loud. He talks about how it's awesome. They killed all these drones. And Seven walks in and he's like, oh, sorry. I didn't mean that. Sorry.
Well, he calls he says drones are mindless automatons. Yeah. Right. So he says, sorry, but Seven quickly. She's insulted, and she makes some really, really smirky kind of, you know, snarky response to Paris. And both Paris and Harry are pretty bummed out about that.
They're feel kind of embarrassed. Mm-hmm. We go to Astrometrics, and Seven is showing Tuvok and Janeway. They're
the tactical data.
The tactical data from those nodes. The Borg nodes, they have all this information now, so they can track these Borg ships.
That's right.
And they see in the tracking of some of these ships that there is one Borg sphere that is damaged.
Mm-hmm. Damaged by an ion storm, not by an attack, but it's sort of limping back to Borg territory. Back. Yeah.
And that gets an idea. We go to the briefing room and she's telling the crew basically, hey, you know, usually we're defending ourselves from the Borg.
Yeah.
We're going to be the ones to attack this time. Yes. And she brings up this idea of Fort Knox.
Yeah.
And she
hands it to you, Tommy boy. Like, Tom, come on, Tom.
Tell him about Fort Knox. Translate for me.
Right.
And I wrote down, boy, does Tom know a lot about Fort Knox. I like knew the, you know, structural, you know, blueprint data information.
You knew all that. You knew that the Ferengi tried breaking in 10 years ago. Yes. It would turn into a museum. You knew that when money went, you know, the way of the dodo bird and was no longer used.
Yeah.
I was waiting for you to say, and that was the introduction of crypto was what actually started the move That's away funny. From modern currencies to cryptocurrencies.
But she basically says, she says like this Borg sphere is like Fort Knox and we're going to break into it and steal their tech.
Right.
We could use this tech to help us get back.
Right.
And Chakotay says, well, we should run simulations on this. Like, this is going to be tough.
Yeah.
If we're going to attack them, we got to run simulations. So basically we leave that scene. We're going to go attack a Borg, a damaged Borg sphere.
To steal a transwarp coil, a functioning transwarp coil. And then my notes I wrote down, essentially, Dark Frontier Parts 1 and 2 is Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11.
Yep.
Which is funny. I don't know.
The heist movie.
This was 98 or 99 we shot this. I bet you that Ocean's 11 was that. I bet you the writers just had gone just to see Ocean 11. Right? And like, how can we put Ocean's 11 in Delta Quadrant? Oh, yeah. It's a Borg crew.
Can you see that conversation between Braga and Minowski right there? Yeah,
because that's how writers do it.
They do it. Honestly, it enters their brain.
Oh, what movies are you into right now? What shows? Okay, how do we twist that around so it fits our show?
Yeah,
and that's totally steal all the time.
Yeah, we're in the captain's ready room now,
we are.
And you know, Janeway says that we can gain some information from Seven's parents' research and log entries. Seven's pretty resistant in this conversation. She doesn't seem too, you know, jazzed about this whole mission, to be perfectly honest. But Janeway, you know, basically says, okay, you know, well, if you don't want to do it, I'll assign Chakotay to review. And she says, no, no, no. These are, you know, log entries of my parents. I have the time. I will do it. I will take care of this. So she agrees with it.
I wrote down here, I feel like it's a very risky, and again, questionable Janeway call.
Yeah, it really is.
To open up this trauma wound for Seven in such a critical, you know, plan. Like, why have that who has no objective experience with this? You're going to dump all this detailed history of her life.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like, I know she offered, you know, well, Chakotay can do it if you don't want to do it, but she should have actually encouraged, like, I'm telling you what I'm going to do, Seven.
Yeah.
I'm going to use your parents' journals that we found.
Yeah.
But we're going to have somebody else do it because I don't think it's smart for you to, like, to me, that would have been a more, better leadership kind of decision. But
yeah, because really, let's just break it down. I mean, her experience as a child, I'm sure, was traumatic. Being, absolutely, you know, and so that type of PTSD is now going to be triggered by her being forced to review all these log entries. It's like Janeway really didn't sit there and think about the mental toil or the emotional toil, the emotional price, the mental price that Seven of Nine will have to pay to go through these logs and relive everything, which, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we go to Cargo Bay now, and Neelix is joining Seven in her regeneration area.
Yes.
He's bringing boxes of notes and journals that he's organized. Mm-hmm. We learned that they were exobiologists. And and I did actually, after I watched this and was snooping around a little on the interwebs.
Yes.
I did see that Brannon or Joe or somebody had referenced, what's her name that did all the gorilla studies? A Fosse?
What's her name? Jane.
Jane.
I know what you're
saying.
That
lady that did all that. Yeah. Studying that they were inspired. They wanted her parents to be like that, like biologists that are going into the wild.
Okay.
You know,
and getting up close with the wildlife. So that's the inspiration for the Hansons.
Jane, what is her name? Was it
Jane Goodall. Is that
Goodall.
Right?
That's okay. It. Jane Goodall. Nice.
I got it. Thank you.
That's it. Yeah. They wanted like a Jane Goodall kind of couple, like, you know, Jane Goodall was obsessed with gorillas and lived with them and became one of them. And
yes.
So I thought that was an interesting analogy.
Gorillas are extremely dangerous animals. You can't, you know, you have to have your guard up, and they're very powerful, very strong. And the Borg, again, very strong, powerful, and dangerous. Yeah. So same thing. Same parallel. Yeah.
I did like in this scene, Neelix says, you know, wow, I'm really kind of jealous because you've got all this information about your childhood and all I have left is a photo of my sister. That's all
because
got.
He notices Seven's, you know, just not enthused about this. And you know, he puts it into perspective. He's like, look, all I have is a fading hollow image of my sister. I would give anything to have this much content of my family. So he's just trying to make her feel a little bit more, you know, excited about it, I guess. But she's still apprehensive.
Neelix leaves and she pulls one of those journals out of the middle of the box, just randomly pulls one out. And we sort of dissolve into
a flashback.
Now we're back at the Raven. We meet Magnus and Aaron Hansen. This is
Annika's. I think the scene that we see, we cut in on a shot of the Borg cube kind of flying around with Annika playing with it.
She's playing with a toy.
Right.
And we see that in space. It was a nice transition, actually. Yes, it was very cool.
It was. We have a exterior shot of the USS Raven, and you hear a little bit of a log entry from Magnus talking about how they've been searching for weeks on end, and they haven't found any trace of the Borg yet. Then we have a cut to the Raven Bridge, and Magnus and Aaron Hansen are discussing whether or not to refuel right now. And, you know, this is, I guess, you know, important, you know, information that has to be discussed. But Annika cannot sleep, so she enters. So she comes in, and before Magnus can sort of, you know, tell Annika a bedtime story, Aaron detects quantum waves nearby.
The
a
Borg.
Transwarp conduit is detected. Gold. Yes, they have struck gold. The Borg
just when they're about to give up and they've broken all these rules, they've gone into Romulan space, they've done, they've really pushed the limits and have come up empty-handed.
Yes.
Now they detect some
Borg. Found it. They found it. And the Borg detects them. The Borg scans them, but does not engage, which then sort of enforces his theory that unless you pose a threat, they're not going to engage you. And not only a threat, but if you impose a if you present yourself as a target that it's worthwhile for the Borg to assimilate, they will also engage you. But if you're kind of just, you know, off to the side being a wallflower, you're okay, I guess. So.
Yeah. At this point, the Borg aren't coming after them to assimilate them yet.
Correct.
As long as they're not a threat. So they follow from a distance. And,
right.
And then we hear Chakotay kind of pull us out of this flashback.
That's
He's calling Seven
to the bridge.
To the bridge and she comes out of it, heads to the bridge. We go up to the bridge.
Yeah.
And now we and Voyager have caught up to the sphere, its own screen. It is damaged.
And we are, and my note is, we are now paralleling the USS Raven. We are also keeping our distance from the Borg vessel.
10 million kilometers away.
Yes.
What Paris says.
Yeah.
Seven enters and gets very emotional when she sees this sphere.
Janeway asks Seven to analyze the sphere. And she says, well, they have about 72 hours before they have transwarp capability. So that is our time period. We need to have our Fort Knox heist ready to go.
We have 72 hours to figure out our Ocean's 11 heist.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Now we cut to what we think is on the sphere. We feel like we've jumped into the hallway.
Borg cube interior.
What we're
going to
realize
right?
is this is a simulation, but we don't know that right now. We think we're in the real thing that we've jumped into their heist. Janeway, Seven of Nine, Tuvok, and Harry are the away team, and they're walking down a corridor.
Yeah,
they're armed with phaser rifles and
they
seem to be like they know where they're going. They've got this plan. It's very Ocean's 11.
It's very choreographed. The music, the blocking. And to me, I just wrote down this is feature film right here. This whole bit, this scene.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Chakotay chimes in from the Voyager bridge saying, hey, team, you're six seconds behind.
6 seconds.
So now,
yeah,
you're like thinking, oh, my gosh, they're going to be in trouble. They're going to be in trouble. Tuvok and Harry set charges. I just really like how the scenes were shot again. Once again, it's like a feature. And then we are beamed out. But the Borg, unfortunately, have also tapped into the transporter beam and they beam onto the bridge. And Chakotay says, you know, stop simulation. And that's when we realize this is not the real deal. This is actually on the holodeck that we're, you know, performing this. So,
by the way, when we cut to the bridge and Chakotay saying you got 6 seconds and stuff, and then there's a shot where it's on Chakotay sitting in the captain's chair. And then all of a sudden, Tom Paris slides into a close up.
Oh, yeah. I like that one too.
That was a cool move. I was like, let me see that again. I rewound it. I was like, that's a cool entrance.
Yes.
I don't know if that was my idea or Cliff Bold, but it was just like, zoom.
I like it because it continued the same sort of very precise movements and blocking and featurey movement and action that the prior scene set up. So it continued on the bridge with you swinging into action. Yeah. You never swing into action. You're always already there. So I noticed that too. I didn't write
that
note. Thank you.
It was funny.
Up. Yeah.
But anyway, the simulation ends with the drones beaming on.
We cut to the transporter room, right? So we're in the transporter room and the team is now discussing how to improve the time on the heist, how to improve the heist plan. Seven mentions that her parents were able to remain inside a Borg cube for hours on end without detection. And, you know, the question is, well, how do they do that? And she's, well, I'm not sure yet. I got to keep, you know, looking into their notes.
Janeway's like, even if we can just shave a few seconds off.
Yeah, that's all we need.
That's all we need. Yeah. They're really close. So we go into the hall. Yeah. And
Janeway,
it's Janeway and Seven walking. And I made a note in all caps here.
What'd you write?
This entire scene is looped. I was like, yuck. Let me explain.
As all of our scenes were looped,
we've talked about looping before, but I realized Rebecca asked, like, have you ever explained what looping is? I want to explain it. Let's say there's 25 lines in the scene that you're walking down the hall with somebody.
Right.
And you've got 12 lines and they've got 13 lines or whatever it is. You have to do one line at a time. You're standing in this recording booth. There's a big screen in front of you. You got headphones on like this.
Yep.
And they play one line at a time, and they let you listen to the production track, what you Correct. Did on the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, okay, get ready. And they roll it back a couple lines. And when it gets close to that one line, you'll hear a beep, 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 beep. And then that last silent beep.
Oh, yeah. The fourth one is silent. That's right.
The fourth one is silence. Beep, 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 silence. And where that silence, that fourth beep should be, is where you start to say
your dialogue.
Your dialogue. If the line is seven, you did great. Then it'll go beep, 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 seven. You did great. Like that.
Yeah.
And you do that over and over for one line, and then you move on to the next line. So if you've got 12 lines or 20 lines or whatever it is, it could take a while.
Yeah.
And if you're walking, you know, in the scene, you're not walking on the ADR stage. So it's a different quality. I hate loop scenes. If you can avoid it, it's great. Entire scene was looped. And I could tell.
The looping for us, for all the listeners out there, the looping happens way after we've actually done principal photography. We're so not even in the mindset of what we were doing that day at work when we're totally focused. And so to really get the exact same feeling and pacing and urgency and whatever you need is so difficult when you're looping, you know? Yeah. And so sometimes you might be watching a TV show and you're wondering, oh my gosh, did the actor just check out on that line? No, that was probably looped. They were probably so focused on the day of filming, but when they went back to loop a month later, they're sitting there going, okay, I just had
sometimes you'll loop two or three episodes in one session.
Yes, they'll give you multiple episodes. And now your head's even more confused.
Yeah, you're doing, you know, five scenes from one episode and three scenes from another and six scenes from another. And you're like, okay, wait, what is the scene? What's the story again?
Yeah.
So anyway, I made a big note there of like that hallway scene was looped.
Yeah.
Meh. Not great.
Yeah. And also, Robbie, this is the first time I ever looped. Right. So this is my first big job. I didn't loop on any other job. I didn't do any voiceover. And I remember going in and that first session was a nightmare for me because I kept on the boop, boop, boop. I kept jumping it by a millisecond. I would jump or I would be late by a little millisecond. It's almost like I would like to have seen a visual cue for the begin. You know what I'm saying? If I saw a physical green light that went on in the little booth that I was in, that would help me because you pretty much on the fourth where the beep would be is when you would begins, but it's silent. So that kind of throws you a little bit.
It's not easy to do.
So for all of you who are up and coming actors who end up being on a TV show or a film, just realize the first time you do looping, it's not going to be the easiest thing, but the more you practice, the better you will get. And it will become like second nature.
Now we have a space shot for a minute and then we come passing.
But before we jump into that, we didn't talk about the purpose of that scene though. The purpose of that corridor scene during that walk and talk is to show that Janeway is concerned that Seven may not be up to the mission.
Yeah, the simulation upset her.
Yes.
Seven's like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. Yeah. I'm fine. I want to do this. So then we go to space shot back to cargo bay.
Yeah.
And Seven is preparing to read another batch of her parents' logs and the doors open and it's Naomi Wildman.
Oh, little Scarlett Palmer's.
Love Scarlett Palmer. And Naomi can't sleep. She had a nightmare. She was going to be assimilated.
Yeah.
She's super scared. She wants
to hang out with Seven.
I want to know what it's like. Like I have this nightmare, Seven. I want to know what's it like. And Seven says, you will terminate this line of questioning.
But did you notice all the questions that she's asking turn into the same questions that Annika was asking her dad in the flashback? So that's when you start getting a little hint of, wait, something's off here. Yeah. It's getting Twilight Zone-y. It's getting Twilight Zone-y. And sure enough, when, she tells Naomi to return to her quarters and Naomi says, resistance is futile. And a Borg little implant sprouts on her cheek there.
It was really well done. It was well done and shocking. Movie.
Yes. It was like, oh my God, she's a Borg drone as well. And then now Seven looks around. The cargo bay starts to fill up with Borg drones. They're everywhere. Seven thinks it's a dream. And and she can hear the queen's voice. And the queen is like, this isn't a dream. I've accessed your neural transceiver. Voyager will be spared if you rejoin the collective. So in essence, she's saying that this mission will fail. We already know what you're planning. We know what you're going to do. But if you want to save Voyager, just come back to us.
Yeah. And she's and like, why me? She says to her, why do you want me?
Yes.
And the queen says, because you are unique. You're unique. Mm-hmm. And then there's kind of a like she wakes up from this dream or this communication that's happening ends.
Yes.
And she looks around and it's just debris. There are no drones there. Right. And there's this cool crane shot, which I made a note. We didn't use cranes often on our show. It was not a common tool. Mm-hmm. And I do remember sometime around this at this point, the Atlanta Olympics, they had bought for the Atlanta Olympics, which were 96. Summer Olympics of 96, they bought a ton of these European cranes, camera cranes to do things like the rowing and the swimming and all that. And then when the Olympics were over, whoever, you know, produced the Olympics had all these cranes, like literally a few hundred of these cranes.
Oh my goodness.
And I remember Doug Knapp and Marvin Rush and Billy Peets and some of our crew went and bought a couple of these cranes.
I remember this. Yes. They actually went on a road trip to buy the cranes.
They went and bought these cranes, and Doug Knapp had this thing called Hot Gears where you could put the camera on one of those Olympic cranes and remotely operate the camera.
Yes.
They were like, we're going to buy a couple of these and we're going to rent them out. And all of a sudden, when I saw this shot, it just reminded me of the Olympic cranes.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden we started using cranes all the time.
Of course.
I was like, why are we using a crane on the bridge? Well, the reason we use a crane, you know, Marvin would say, well, so we can get the camera across in movement and blah, blah, blah. I was like, but we didn't do that for like years. And now all of a sudden we're using these cranes. It's because they were making money. They were
they had to offset the price of what they paid for it by renting it out. So this is the reason.
Oh yeah. So they were like, all of a sudden they were like, we need a crane for that scene. We need a crane for that scene too. Got to have a crane. And when I saw that shot, it just reminded me of the Olympic cranes. Anyway,
that is so funny. Good call. Yeah. All right.
Complete your staining project with Pittsburgh Paints and Stains now at Menards. Stain in one coat with ultra advanced semi-transparent stain. It's a stain and sealant in one that can be applied to damp wood and on hot, sunny days, allowing you to clean and stain your deck in one day. Save big money on Pittsburgh Paints and Stains and head into Menards to get your staining project started today. Save big money
at Menards. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We have a flashback, and the Raven is following the Borg cube for probably 3 months at this point. Mm-hmm. And then the cube itself enters.
We find out, by the way, they've followed this Borg cube for months, traveling in its wake.
Yes.
And they have ended up in the Delta Quadrant.
Well, that's because they enter the transwarp, because the cube enters a transwarp conduit and the Raven just follows it, right? And that causes them to go into the Delta Quadrant. So.
But they're in the Delta Quadrant.
They're like, in the Delta Quadrant.
That's a big deal.
And they're not even like worried about it. Did you notice that? They're like, and now,
they're like,
we're in the Delta
Quadrant. When we were in the Delta Quadrant, it was a 2-hour pilot episode. It was a big deal. When they went to the Delta Quadrant, they're like, we sort of rode the wake of the Borg. And here we are in the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, there's no fear. There's no, it's like, hey, we're scientists. We'll figure it out. So,
and Magnus is, he's on board now. He's developed, he's got this eyepiece this yeah, cool got eyepiece. It looks like something Janet Jackson would wear in a concert. Or something.
Yeah. And he has a piece of tech called the bio dampener. So the bio dampener is what essentially keeps him safe and camouflaged from the drones. And he can now observe the drones and see what they're doing and just kind of track them. And like a scientist sort of really tracking life forms. This is what he's doing with.
And he's talking, he's on the ship and he's talking to Aaron back on the Raven.
Yeah.
And he's, and Aaron says, "Oh, how's Junior?"
Yeah. They have names for all the drones, like, which is
they've named them.
Great.
And, and then he goes, "Oh, Junior's fine."
But that's what Jane Goodall did. Jane Goodall named all her gorillas.
That's what I'm saying.
So you got to name the drones.
Like, Junior's fine. And then all of a sudden, a couple other Borg drones come over. Yeah.
Needlefingers and who else?
Yeah, Needlefingers and Bill. And I was like, and Bill? Yeah, why Bill? Like, Junior's funny. Needlefingers is cool.
And Bill?
Bill? Yeah. That's the best you can do. But he says
I think they should have kind of
deactivated
Bob.
Him.
Yeah,
Bob. We had plenty of Bobs on the show.
Yeah, we did.
Aaron says, "What are they doing to Junior?" And he says he thinks they're making repairs to him. Mm-hmm. And then he realizes, nope, they're deactivating this drone and dismantling him. And then all of a sudden, Magnus sort of fritzes a little bit, and we realize his biodampener is losing power. He needs to get out of there. He needs to go back to the Raven.
That is right.
And we transition to
the sick bay
and the science lab
off
sick bay. Seven is showing designs for these biodampeners to Tuvok and the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And she found these designs in her parents' logs and explains that these devices should solve their timing problem. That, you know, they don't need to get this so fast
because
they'll be camouflaged. They can have time.
So Tuvok asked the doctor. Tuvok asked the doctor to replicate four of them for the team.
Yep.
And at this point, the doctor tells Seven not to think of all these log entries that she's looking at as a research project, but as an exploration of how you were raised.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a trigger for Seven. And Seven says
she's
that her parents underestimated the Borg. And it, because of their arrogance, this is the reason why I was raised by the Borg. And I'm out of here, Uncle Doctor, and leaves.
She's really triggered. We go out in the hall and she's kind of freaking out, very emotional. Handheld shot. And I made a note here. This has got to be Marvin handheld with the camera.
Yeah.
Because he loved doing these shots where he could sort of dance with the actors. And I got to say, Marvin Rush, he was almost like an actor with us sometimes because he would feel the emotion of these moments and sort of find the shot if it was pushing in or twisting the camera a little or, you know, whipping to see what you're looking at and then back to you. Mm-hmm. He was very emotionally tied to the scene, Marvin. Mm-hmm. And I felt that in the shot.
Really good. Yeah. But you know, it's a unique scene because typically Seven is very composed, but with this little panic attack she's having, she actually has to find a little nook away from other prying eyes.
Hides
to go through the panic attack, which, you know, again, you don't see that scene with Seven very often. We have a captain's log supplemental. She says, Janeway says, Operation Fort Knox is ready to proceed at 0600 hours. We are in the captain's ready room after this captain's log, and Seven is being offered coffee by Janeway. Janeway, and she refuses. And Janeway says, "Well, you know, it can keep you sharp." And Janeway,
I love this.
She tells Seven, "Unfortunately, she must reassign Seven to the bridge. B'Elanna will take her place." And Janeway says, Seven is just preoccupied and agitated. Everyone's noticing this.
Mm-hmm.
And Seven says, "No, absolutely not. I must join the away team.
You will fail without me."
Yes, you will fail without me.
Voyager is my collective now.
Right. But they go through a couple rounds before she actually says that, because Seven's basically, "I must join." Janeway says, "I'm standing firm." And then Seven says something and Janeway says, "No, I can't." And then finally, "If I'm not on the mission, it will fail. Voyager is my collective." And that is what pulls Janeway to her side. She's like, "Okay, your reasoning, your argument, I'll buy it." But she's also, her spidey senses are tingling. She's like, "Something's off here." You can tell she's already playing it that way.
And she does say at the end of the scene,
"Hmm.
I'm really glad that you're a part of Voyager."
Yes, she does.
"I'm really glad you're here." And it was a night. I made a note here. This scene was blocked and photographed and composed really elegantly.
Yes.
This was a great masterclass in directing a two-hander with some good movement. Mm-hmm. And it was really wonderful, wonderfully directed, and wonderfully acted. I like that scene a
good
lot.
Good job, Cliff Ball.
Yes, sir.
Borg sphere interior, a vessel was detected, and they detect.
Yeah, they detect a shuttle.
With three life signs.
Yeah, three life signs on the shuttle. We cut to the bridge, and we realize, oh, this is part of their Ocean's 11 plan. Yeah. There's nobody on there.
It's an unmanned shuttle.
Fake bio readings. Yeah. It's an unmanned shuttle. It's bait. It's basically bait. But they're not taking it.
No, but my note is yet another shuttle we're just throwing out.
Throwing it away.
We keep going through shuttles. Because
we have the Delta Flyer now.
I
we
get don't need those stinking it, but you shuttles. Know.
We don't need those stinking old shuttles.
All right.
We
that's got the fine. Flyer. We have the flyer. Mm-hmm. Okay. They're not taking the bait, like you said. Yeah. We're over in the transporter room where we see the team is ready to go.
They're ready to
Harry,
go.
And Harry says, look, well, if they're not taking the bait, just fire a phaser shot across their bow. Seven says, you know, they're going to perceive that as a threat, and then the shuttle will be destroyed, and that's going to destroy the whole game plan. And Janeway thinks very quickly on her feet, and she says, mm-hmm. increase the energy output of the shuttle's warp profile to present a more inviting target. And it works. Tractor pulses engage by the Borg vessel, and as
they prepare to assimilate this shuttle,
and as the shuttle is being pulled into the Borg vessel, they drop their shields for a split second. That's all the team needs to beam in, and that's mm-hmm. how we get in. So cool plan so far.
So we're back in the sphere.
Yep.
There's more hallway shots, more hallway walking, and I made a note here. I'm like, this is exactly the same shots from the earlier scene. I was like, that's clever, sneaky producing. They basically wrote the same scene in two times. So you shoot it once, basically shoot it once and use it twice, and you're getting double the screen time for the same money.
Yeah.
You're getting 50% off.
I get it. I made the same note, but I also made the note, I don't like the reusing of the footage. I would rather have new footage. I'm sorry. You know,
some new footage. It's because,
a little bit, but still.
But it was a lot of the same.
You saw the same
bits.
Blocking too. Exactly. Exactly. There's that one shot where Janeway kind of pulls the thing that whatever she's holding, she puts down on it. She flips it down. She's not holding it as a as a phaser rifle weapon, but she kind of moves it off of her arm or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it just matched exactly to what we saw in that holodeck simulation. Yeah. So that bummed me out.
I know.
I mean, the differences are Seven hears the queen, and then she gets startled when Janeway asks if she's okay. So that's new. That's added, right? Mm-hmm. But the charges being detonated, being placed, those are exactly the same. Harry squatted down the exact same way, opened up that little suitcase the same way, you know, so a lot of the same stuff. The shields are down and the coil is beamed aboard, because once the charges detonate, that sort of knocked the shields out. Mm-hmm. The transwarp coil is beamed aboard. Seven hears the queen again, and that's when she turns to Janeway and says, I'm staying here. I
was like, what?
And then Janeway draws her weapon on Seven. And like, what are you doing? Yeah, she's like, you're coming with me.
She was probably going to stun her or something.
And
or,
then what? Piggyback her out? I don't know.
Okay. I thought the same thing.
She draws her rifle. Yeah. But that's when a force field comes up. A Borg force field comes up between the two of them. And Janeway says, you're coming. And Seven says, no. Janeway goes, you're still coming. And Janeway says, Seven says, look, if you stay, you will be assimilated. You got to go. So Janeway leaves very reluctantly.
We cut over to Tuvok and Harry also at the same time. They run into some Borg and they realize the Borg can see them now. So this, these bio shields or whatever, bio dampeners are not working anymore.
Nope.
And they can be seen.
Yep.
We got to get out of here.
On the beam up. I did try to play my shock of like, where the heck's Seven, you know, the best that I could.
Oh, yeah.
Because I felt
for sure that
I felt no one else was playing that. No one else, meaning basically Tuvok. But then Tuvok's Vulcan, so he doesn't really have much of So I was the only person to sell that, you know, in that shot of like, what? Where's Seven? And I only had like 0.2 seconds to do it in. So I tried my best.
It was good. I think that played.
All right. So if it played, it played. That's good.
I think that played. Great. Right. Now we're on the bridge, and Janeway tells them, follow that Borg ship.
Pursue it.
Target their propulsion, she says, but the Borg goes to transwarp.
Yeah.
We miss it. And we've got this cool space shot of it coming out of transwarp, and we reveal this Borg city. It was the most massive Borg complex
in space. Yes, or Borg
I wrote
space
down city.
Station.
Later, they call it a Borg complex. But at this point, I was like, that's a Borg city.
Yeah.
It was a giant cube, all kinds of things. It was like the International Space Station on steroids. Like it was enormous. All these things.
The ISS on steroids. Thank you. That's a great analogy. Okay.
It was insane.
It was. And the sphere actually enters into a cube, right? So that's where it goes to. I'm assuming this is the cube that the Borg Queen is in. This is what's going on here. We're in the cube interior.
We're in the cube interior. Yeah. She approaches the chamber. Mm-hmm. Very cool set. I love the lights, the kind of rock and roll lights that were going on in there.
Yeah.
And a cool, super cool sequence of the Borg Queen getting assembled and put
attached
together.
To her body. Which we see also in First Contact, the feature film with TNG cast, the same type of assembling of the Borg Queen. And so then the Borg Queen walks out, and I just thought, wow, I don't even know if that was in the script, but that actress just touched Seven of Nine's face.
She did. She caressed her face.
She's caressing her face. I'm like,
and
what
she says,
is going
welcome
on?
Home.
Welcome home. Yes. Yeah. Welcome home. And I did, my note is she did a good job. I mean, both Alice Krieg and this actress both did a good job in, you know, acting as the Borg Queen. And I think something happened where Alice was not available. That's what I recall.
I think she was too. I think they wanted to get Alice, and then she was working on something else. Like, okay, yeah. we'll find someone else.
Yeah.
Someone else. And I thought she was great. I thought Susanna Thompson was phenomenal. She was really, really good.
Yeah.
And Susanna Thompson had done a couple of roles on TNG. She was on DS9.
Isn't that the name of the gal from the Bangles, the band? Susanna Hoffs. Oh, it's Hoffs. Okay, sorry. Hoffs. All right.
I think so.
Right. Susanna Hoffs as the Borg Queen would be different, a different Borg Queen. We're back in the cube interior after a commercial break, a little bit of time passage. And the Borg Queen basically says, you know, you have changed to Seven of Nine, but at the core, you are still mine. And then Seven has some little snarky comment where she's like, well, you guys have changed too. I expected to be assimilated immediately. And then she says something really snarky, and the Borg Queen says, and now you have a sense of humor. And it's just like, whoa, look at this dialogue here.
And by the way, I made a note here in this scene where she's assembled, put together, and she says, welcome home. And then we go to commercial, come back.
Yeah.
That is exactly the spot where if it were one episode, you would have ended. So
this
assembly and welcome home, and then the continuation was directed by two different directors.
Correct.
Probably on the same day, honestly.
You think
they probably
so?
Had, yeah, because they're not going to put Susanna in that makeup on different days. They're gonna have the directors work on the same day if she's going in that big makeup.
Okay.
And I did read when I was on the interwebs after I watched this that the writer said, I think Brannon said, Cliff Bowl was the one that pushed for getting, if this was going to be two episodes with a cliffhanger, he was like, you've got to show the Borg Queen before the end of my episode.
And he fought for that.
For putting that portion in his section so that he could, if it ever was shown as two episodes,
that
he would at least have that cliffhanger of, oh my God, it's the Queen.
Okay.
So I thought that's kind of cool that he sort of fought for, give me that introduction of the Queen, and then the part two will continue what she does.
Very cool.
Yeah.
She then orders Seven to regenerate so that she can order her thoughts during the regeneration, because Seven is clearly quite conflicted right now.
Yeah.
And we jump to a scene in engineering where Torres tells Janeway that she was having trouble modulating the coil to the warp field, but she says she had inspiration in the morning and that the key is to adapt our systems to theirs. So she figured that
she read some of Seven's personal logs and was inspired to make this adjustment. And Janeway gets pissed off at her. Janeway was very defensive of Seven, which is not common. Usually Janeway's exhausted by Seven and critical of Seven. And, but this time she's like, B'Elanna, you messed up. Don't read your clothes.
You messed up. But then, you know, but Torres has a valid point too. Torres is sitting there going, okay, she's not even here anymore. It's like, yeah, she's gone. It's like, you are you really going to argue for someone who's sort of abandoned the crew? So that's her argument. But yeah, true, Janeway rarely sticks up for Seven like that. So yeah, that was nice to see. Now we jump to Cargo Bay. Right?
Cargo Bay, yeah, mm-hmm, looking at the debris again. Yep.
Chakotay and Janeway are still discussing the Seven issue. What
not
happened?
Flirting. You know, I don't know why they're not flirting.
No flirtation whatsoever.
This whole episode, I was like, where's the JC Shipper
actually
action?
She does flirt later when the plan, she puts her hand on Chakotay's shoulder.
Yes, she does.
Like, she's like, he's now going to be on command here. And she didn't have to touch him like that, but she did. So that was
Janeway touches everybody. I mean, it's funny watching this episode.
You feel that way?
At one point, Rebecca said, Rebecca goes, you know how our dog Walter, she goes, Walter has to lick everything that he comes in contact. Janeway has to touch everybody that
she comes in contact with.
Just like Walter.
Okay.
And I was like, you're right. She does. Janeway's constantly like putting a hand on someone's back or shoulder, or touching their face.
Okay. Okay. All right. So they are discussing the Seven issue and, mm-hmm, and Janeway's just sort of perplexed, but she's sort of, she's just trying to figure out what went down.
Why did she join the collective? Yeah. Chakotay says, well, she said to you 2 years ago that she said, quote, I will betray you.
Right.
And Janeway says, no, she doesn't want to believe that.
No.
And she said, Seven told her that she came to see Voyager as her own collective.
Right.
So that's not it.
Neelix interrupts at this point. Neelix
comes wants over to vaporize and says, the trash. We've taken all the good stuff. Yep. Can I vaporize everything?
One thing left. Should I deactivate Seven's alcove? And Janeway says, leave it alone. So clearly, her plan, her designs are... She's not giving up. She is not giving up. We jump to the captain's ready room. Tuvok interrupts Janeway, saying that there is a member of the crew that insisted on speaking with the captain.
By the way, when Tuvok interrupts her, we see that she's having the computer analyze some time index energy readings.
Yes.
And I was like, what's a time index energy reading? There was a subspace energy at this time moment.
Right.
It was
correct.
Anyway, so she says, computer, analyze all this. And then Tuvok comes in and Naomi and
interrupts. Yeah. Yep. And you know, Janeway tries to brush it off saying Chakotay can handle this. And then she sees little Naomi peek her head around the corner.
Yeah, she pops behind Tuvok
and she goes, okay, granted. And it's a very cute scene because she has come in with her little pad, with her little plan, how to rescue Seven. And then Janeway then goes back to, after listening to the plan, she's like, well, it's more complicated than that, but thank you for your effort.
Thank you, crewman, she says.
Thank you, crewman. And then Janeway looks at her little readout on her display and says, like, look at this. Take a look at these little, readings here. And they realize that these are communications from the Borg.
The energy signals were comm signals, from the Borg. By the way, she does give Naomi some advice. I want to read what she said. So Janeway says to Naomi, thank you, crewman. And then Naomi says, you're not going to give up, are you? And she leans down. It's the cutest moment. She leans down, squats down next to eye to eye with Naomi. And she says, there's three things that I've learned to remember as captain, Naomi. Keep your shirt tucked in, go down with the ship, and never abandon a crew member.
Yeah.
I thought that was very sweet. Keep your shirt tucked in.
First of all, we
have jumpsuits. We don't have shirts. So there's nothing to tuck in, but okay. Okay. But it was a cute little saying.
And during the 90s, when we were filming, every time I wore a suit jacket and whatever, my shirt was always untucked.
That was the style.
That was the look in the 90s. So, all right.
She does get the analysis that this is Borg comm signals coming from the Borg to Cargo Bay 2. So the Borg were communicating, that much we know. So now we cut out to Borg City again. We're out to space and we see cool Borg City.
Right.
And then we get a POV of like this focus shift of a Borg looking straight at the lens.
Yes.
And it's Keith.
It's Keith again.
It's Keith again.
Yes. Yeah.
Our stand-in and background artist, Keith.
Keith has just placed a new piece of Borg tech on Seven. He's backing away from her.
They've enhanced her optical implants.
It's a neural processing adjunct designed to increase synaptic efficiency. Seven wants no part of it. Seven's like, take this thing off of me. And the queen, you know, wants Seven to stay here.
As we're an individual.
We're not going to turn you into full board.
We're not going to turn you into a drone.
Don't worry. Yeah.
Because they want to see her humanity, she says.
Yes. Yes, they want to use Seven, use her eyes as a human being, her uniqueness as an individual, to give them that human perspective, which will then help them successfully assimilate humanity. Mm-hmm. In the prior two tries that they've you know tried to assimilate humans, it's failed, and so mm-hmm. they feel that this is their kind of like their Trojan horse in a way. You know, we're going to be able to get in mm-hmm. and know how the humans are thinking. Mm-hmm. And Seven says she will resist. And the queen, and this is interesting. The queen says very silently, I know. She didn't say, we know, which is what she should have said.
Oh, interesting.
She says, I know. So now the queen is really changing her dialogue and her vocabulary.
Interesting. I didn't catch that.
Yeah. So my feeling was she says, I know, to make Seven feel more comfortable. Like, look, I'm going to speak
as an individual.
I'm going to speak to you as if using the same type of dialogue you would. Yeah. We're both. Right. I'm an individual too. I know you and I are the same, Seven. So I thought, wow, that's kind of smart.
Interesting.
That the way that, and maybe I'm reading way too much into this, but
I like it. I think it's great.
I feel Braga and Manosky sat there and thought, okay, if we
I bet they did.
I know it.
Those kind of details are very important.
Mm-hmm.
So she says that there's a shake on the Borg ship, and we realize they're disengaging from the Borg complex.
Right.
They're taking headed off to assimilate an entire planet.
Species 10026.
Uh-huh.
392,000 life forms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the queen says, I sense your compassion. That's a human impulse. And that's kind of how we end the scene is.
Yeah.
Seven is freaked out. Oh my God. 400,000
like,
people are going to be assimilated. Yeah. And this sounds horrible.
Yeah.
We go into a flashback off of those feelings.
Yes.
And we're back on the USS Raven. They are examining a new drone that they've beamed over from the cube.
Yeah. Because what we learn is that the cube linked up with another Borg vessel and took on 50,000 new drones. So now, you know, they've already got names like Junior, Needlefingers. Now they have to come up with 50,000 new names
to
sort of tag these new drones.
Yes.
And it's interesting because this drone that they're inspecting is inside the Raven. So you're thinking, what is happening? But this drone was beamed over mid-regeneration cycle. So it's completely unconscious. It's in regeneration status.
Yes.
And they realize that this is from Unimatrix 01, which means this drone was very close to the queen. This was mm-hmm. a drone that was probably one of the queen's, you know, bodyguards or private drones, I suppose.
Annika is watching mm-hmm. all of this. And while she watches, they decide to put a tracking device onto this drone
mm-hmm.
so that if it ever returns to Unimatrix Unimatrix 1, that they can maybe get an opportunity to study the queen.
Correct. Which would be a huge, you know,
unbelievable
success for their scientific mission.
Yes. And then all of a sudden there's an alarm which alerts them that this regeneration cycle is almost over.
Mm-hmm.
And so quickly they've got to beam it back over to the cube.
Yeah.
And I love where Annika says as they beam it back, she's like, bye.
She's so used to this. It's just become part of her daily routine. Bye, droney. So the drone goes back. Now we're in Janeway's quarters is what I wrote down. Mm-hmm. It is her quarters, I'm pretty sure. And Janeway is now piecing together what happened to Seven while talking to Chakotay. And mm-hmm. she's basically thinking, okay, all right, I think she was coerced, you know, because she said this and this happened. Mm-hmm. And so she's, you know, she's getting to the bottom of the mystery. We jump to the bridge and mm-hmm. Janeway is now making the announcement that we are going on a long range tactical rescue. The Delta Flyer, your shuttle, Robbie, will be equipped with transwarp coil. So the transwarp coil will be equipped on the Delta Flyer.
Yeah.
Multi-adaptive shielding will also be in place. And the away mission will include Paris, Tuvok, Doctor, and Janeway.
Yeah.
Chakotay is going to be left in command on the bridge. That is when Janeway kind of touches him on his shoulder a little bit too long. So there's the JC moment there.
Yes, we thank have God. There's a moment of JC.
Yeah, we've been missing it, but now we see a little bit.
Yes.
We're now in the Delta Flyer interior.
Yep.
And we are engaging in transwarp. And my one note about this is this scene is that the doctor continues to give Tom Paris crap.
He does again. Well, he's very sensitive. The doctor has motion sickness. He says something like, I'm going to have to adjust something
that's
parameters.
Baloney. He's a computer program. He is not going to have emotion. I don't buy that. I call bull crap.
Uh-uh. He's got motion sickness. And
steady as she goes. I'm like, no.
Yeah, and Tuvok finds the Borg warp signature, and he kind of guns it after the doctor's already said he's got motion sickness. And the doctor says, Mr. Paris, I believe the captain's orders were steady as she goes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes,
he has
very
it
funny.
In
I
for like, you.
I love it. I think it's funny.
It's cute, but at the same time, it's like, come on. This is the guy that has actually volunteered his time to be your medic. Like, you know, be nice to the person that's in your own department.
He's learning. The doctor is learning all of these human details.
All right.
We're back on the Borg cube now. The queen is asking Seven for her thoughts on attacking this species, this 400,000 people that they're going to assimilate. And Seven has a solution for this. And then the queen says, oh, I had the same exact thought. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was a test of loyalty in this moment. Like
that was, yeah.
Like, is she gonna choose to help me or is she gonna not?
Yeah, and I think this whole thing to assimilate this species was a test.
It
was just, and also it's a tactic by the Borg Queen to attempt to bring Seven back into the fold. And
yes, exactly.
When she orders Seven to monitor the bio-extraction process of all the captured aliens in the primary assimilation chamber. And then there is a very interesting line from the queen, and she says, maybe I've been pushing you too quickly, which is exactly what Janeway was saying to Seven earlier about going on the mission. And the last thing that the queen says to Seven is, be efficient. I love
that's
that.
Right.
Be efficient. Right. And she leaves. And now we're in the corridor and you see Seven walking along and you can hear people are yelling and screaming and just, you know, you can hear the aliens that are being assimilated.
Yes.
And Seven kind of, you know, she falls to the ground and she gets a cut on her head. Two drones quickly come up to her and grab her and she's thinking she's getting assimilated, but instead they repair the cut on her head. So it's like, oh, I'm okay. But Seven then comes across a room where some aliens are being processed, and her heart takes over, her human heart takes over, and she disables the drone in the room, and she quickly says, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I know there's a vessel, one of your vessels close
one
by.
One of your shuttles.
Yes, you can use it to get away, you know, use this
Here's
frequency.
The coordinates. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Yep. But my note here is that, you know, you have certain amount of money to hire actors. And if you can't have actors, you got to have background actors. These are background actors and they really look very much uninvested in this scene of being assimilated. They're completely like, they're like, huh?
They're like numb. What?
Numb, yeah. Completely numb. And I just,
Seven's talking to them in English.
Yes.
And they are some alien species that we just met. And do the Borg have a universal translator on them?
Clearly, they do.
How are they talking?
They do.
How do they understand this? But yeah, she gets them into their shuttle back in the Queen's chamber. Seven re-enters the Queen's chamber. And the Queen at this point seems pleased. Feels like this assimilation has gone well. It's complete. Yep. And Seven's upset. She says, you know, 300,000 individuals. If those individuals who were just destroyed, should they be congratulated as well? Mm-hmm. Should they be as pleased as you are, basically? And and the queen's like, yes, they should be indeed.
Right.
And the queen says, I've delivered chaos into order.
Well, the queen says, we've missed something like that. She says, I've missed something. And that's when on the view screen, it pops up. You see the alien vessel.
The shuttle.
They're traveling away, trying to escape. Yeah.
And she says, what should I do?
Yeah.
What should I do, Seven?
Seven says, I think it's a waste of energy at this point to even do anything. Just let them go. Mm-hmm. And the queen's like,
queen says, you're a difficult pupil.
We're thinking differently now. Yes. Yeah, we can't. If we let these people go, then this species will continue to resist us. And so I'm gonna just bring them back in. The tractor beam's thrown on there, and then very interesting. Seven's like, please.
She says, let them go.
Let them go. Please. And the queen does.
Like a very human word, right?
Yeah, yes, please. Yes. And the queen does. And I, you know, what I wrote down is this is a chess game between the Borg queen and Seven. And she's thinking, if I let her think that I'm letting them go because I have a little bit of empathy, maybe I can bring her back into the fold easier. So she does. She lets them go. And they take off. So those four aliens are still alive. That's good.
We go to another flashback on the Raven at this point. Mm-hmm. There was a subspace particle storm that has knocked out their multi-adaptive shielding. And so
exposed. 13 seconds.
13.2 seconds.
That was enough.
The Borg detected them and perceived them as a threat. Mm-hmm. And now they're trying desperately to get away from this Borg cube, but it's in pursuit. Annika's trying to sleep. She's scared in her bedroom, and you can hear the parents arguing in the other room, which is like a classic moment of a childhood experience when your kid's scared in their room and hearing the parents argue in the other room.
Yeah.
I like that moment. It was a very human moment.
Yeah. Because we've all had that moment ourselves. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Everyone's experienced that. Magnus comes in to comfort Annika.
Yeah.
And she says, Papa, will it hurt to be a drone? Oh, heartbreaking.
I feel like, Robbie, that you and I can come up with the lyrics to like a country song. Papa, will it hurt to be a drone? Like some type of like good. Country yeah. song, right?
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Okay. Yeah. Nice country, sad country drinking
sad
song.
Sad country song about, drinking song about being a drone.
That's right.
All right.
We go to the Delta Flyer next. The doctor suggests an alteration to Seven's TransLink comm signature. And they can basically contact her. I wrote down, if they can alter her TransLink comm signature, they can send her a DM. It's like a DM. They're DMing her.
Well, he's basically isolated the frequency of her interplexing beacon, and that's how we can get the message. But it can only be sent.
That's how we can DM her.
That's how we can DM her, but it can only be sent when we're close to her. And then Janeway's a little worried, like, well, won't all of them hear that as well? And the doctor says, no. They each have their own specific address, their own IP address, basically.
Exactly.
So we can DM them. Yeah. But at the beginning of the scene, Janeway is still studying the Hansen logs when the doctor interrupts with his news.
And she says something about them. Like she goes, you know, yes, they were crazy, but they were really awesome explorers.
Yeah,
like
she does.
She has a moment where she really
praises them.
Feel that praise and that awe of like they were real, breaking new ground and first timers there. Great explorers. Yeah. Tom picks up a signal at this point.
Yep.
He reports that he's found the sphere. It's 200 light years from their position.
Yeah.
Janeway says, let's head that way. Tells Tuvok, get the multi-adaptive shielding online.
So they have no clue. At this point, they don't know we're here yet. So we have tracked them.
We drop out of transwarp and we find ourselves in
the Borg complex.
Yes. The Borg city.
The ISS. The Borg ISS.
Mm-hmm. Tuvok scans and he says there are trillions of Borg life forms. And I was like,
Was that what he said? He said trillions, not billions.
No, he said trillions.
Trillions of life forms. Oh my
God. That's insane. Are they crazy? There's trillions of Borg and there's four of them. There's three plus a hologram. Like, come on.
This is the one time I'm happy Harry's left on the ship. I'm like,
this is
fine.
This is not a smart
You guys can go in the beehive. Have fun.
Paris says a cube is coming right at them, but then it passes harmlessly right by them.
So
there's a sign that their multi-adaptive cloaking is working. Mm-hmm. And so Janeway says, okay, let's head right to the Unicomplex. And Tuvok scanning for Seven. We go inside the Queen's chamber.
Yeah.
And the Queen wants Seven to help program some new nanoprobe, some new technology. Since she's been gone, they've got new assimilation methods that they've developed
for highly resistant species like humans.
Yes. And basically it's an assimilation virus. It's a they detonate a big charge, a biogenic charge in Earth's atmosphere.
Correct.
And they program these nanoprobes that will slowly start to assimilate people.
Right.
And they won't even, by the time they notice it, half of the humans will already be assimilated. So
did you, while you were watching this, were you thinking, oh my God, is COVID-19 a Borg virus? Exactly. So I mean, it's like, oh my goodness. But yes, but this is something that Seven says, but this will take years. And then the Borg Queen's like, we've waited this long, so it doesn't really matter. We can wait around until the entire assimilation happens.
Yeah.
And then she says to Seven, you sound like a mindless automaton, which is what you said back in the mess hall. Do you remember that? Uh-huh. Where you called her the mindless automaton? So a lot of
everybody's calling her the same thing.
Yeah,
both sides. She's getting it from every side.
Yeah. But now we see Seven sort of flips out of like, you killed my parents. And that's when the queen says, no, we didn't. We just made them perfect. In fact, look over here behind door number one, and there's your dad. So he is there. Magnus as a drone is right there. And Seven's like, Papa? And
she goes, Papa? I know, it's very sweet.
Yeah, very sweet. And
sad. Then suddenly there's a, and Seven suddenly goes, you hear a little noise, like a fritzy thing. And then Seven goes, Captain?
Yeah. Because
the queen's like, what did you say?
And then I love it. The queen doesn't know what's going on until she touches Seven's face. And then she goes, Janeway. So that's how she can. That's her secret superpower. If she touches you, then she knows what you're thinking, evidently.
Maybe that's why Janeway touches everybody.
Read your mind.
That's why Kate was touching everybody.
There you go.
Okay.
All right.
We cut back to the flyer.
Yes. And we're detected.
We are detected, but Tuvok has found the location at this point.
Right.
And
but you guys remodulate shields. So then we evade again, is what happens. Right.
We go back to the queen's chamber.
Still searching for the shuttle. And it's just sort of back and forth between the Borg vessel interior and
the flyer.
Also the flyer. Yeah. Back and forth, this game of chess, you know, find you, remodulate the shields, evade you, find you again. And then finally, Janeway and Tuvok beam on board of the Borg vessel.
Yeah.
And inside the Delta Flyer, now three Borg vessels are converging on the shuttle. Paris remodulates the shields again. And now the queen says, well, I guess we need to try another strategy. And that other strategy is those three vessels just start firing randomly and indiscriminately because they're thinking,
firing blind, he said.
Just keep firing. Yeah, we'll hit something maybe. And Paris is like, they're firing blindly.
Janeway and Janeway's on the board ship there. She's stuck in a hallway though, because there's a force field.
Yeah.
So she decides to wake up a drone and then send him through the force field, and she scans his force field.
The frequency,
copies it.
Very smart.
And then she can get through. Yeah, it was a good move. It was an Ocean's 11 move.
It was.
And she's through, but then her bio dampener, it goes offline.
Right. And she's separated from Tuvok at this point.
And she's separated from Tuvok.
So she makes her way over to, you know, where we see her next, which is with the queen. And the queen and Seven are kind of going at it. And Seven tries to strike the queen, and the queen catches her hand. And that's exactly when Janeway arrives. And Janeway, you know, tries to beam out, but, you know, it doesn't work because a dispersal field is set up by the queen. Janeway tells Seven to shut down the dispersal field. Seven does use her little, you know, her probes into a display console, and she does shut it down. Mm-hmm. But then the queen quickly adapts and raises the shield again. Seven quickly then tells Janeway, target the power node directly above the alcove.
Directly above the queen.
This will disrupt the queen's command interface. And after it happens, Seven looks at the queen and says, like, you know, what does she say? She says something.
She looks at her like,
she's like, we are one. Like, I know exactly what you know. Our thoughts are one.
With a smile on her face.
It really was. It was like, just because I know what you're thinking, I'm going to get out of this. Bam. And so she
tells her what to do. Yeah. Janeway wastes no time. She destroys the node with a blast from her rifle. And then she and Seven disappear in a transporter beam. Mm-hmm. And the queen is furious.
She's so
mad. We have a space shot. The Borg are following.
Yeah.
We're in the three shuttle. Borg vessels. Yeah. We're in the shuttle. The doctor says, "Welcome back, Seven." Mm-hmm. There's some shaking. Tom takes them to Transwarp. The Borg vessel follows.
Only one, not all three. One follows.
Just
them
one of the Borg vessels follows. They've got 2 minutes till they're going to be safe.
Well, they're being fired upon too. Okay. Yes. So the they're Delta Flyer.
Yeah.
Yep. They're losing their shields and everything. And Janeway says, "Reroute power from life support. I'd rather not breathe and still be alive."
Oh, that's
basically,
right.
That's yes. Right. And the doctor's like, "Captain." So that's what happens. And now when they come out of it,
we had a Voyager classic moment them. With Tom going, "We'll be exiting the transport field in 5, 4, 3, and it's shaking, and there's close-ups all around. 2,
we come out. Chakotay orders photon torpedoes to be fired at the conduit to destabilize the
perimeter.
He says,
fire the perimeter and it will collapse.
Right. And it does. So it does collapse. It does. Yep. But then all of a sudden, Torres is like, "Wait a minute. I'm detecting Borg signatures coming from the conduit." And then, of course, we see it's basically just debris. So she's detecting a lot of Borg, but they're all, you know, in pieces. So it's no threat to Voyager. The transwarp coil in a captain's log, we realize, give us another 20,000 light years towards home, 15 years closer to home.
Yes, before it gave out. Transwarp conduit gave out.
Yep.
And now we go to cargo bay to the regeneration bay with Seven, and Janeway's there. And she tells Seven, like, "What are you doing? You should be regenerating. You were supposed to rest."
She's like, "I'm working. I still have work to do. I got work." And then she orders her. She says, "I'm ordering you." And she's like, "But I'm still have to. I order you." And she's
I order you. And she goes to sleep.
Yeah.
And the captain says, "Sweet dreams.
Sweet dreams. Look at that. Nice little message from the captain to Seven. We like it."
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
I can't believe we covered that whole two-parter. It's a movie. It's huge.
That was insanity. Okay. What's your theme for this entire two-parter here?
My theme is, I wrote down, you can't live in the past.
Oh.
Okay. And for me, that covers everything. That's like Seven's no longer who she used to be. She is now part of the Voyager family. She can't live like a Borg. She's not. She's got to let that go. Just like she's got to let go of her childhood. You can't go back. You can't live in the past. The Borg queen needs to let Seven go. She can't live in the past. Seven is not a Borg anymore.
Yeah.
Like, we have to let go of the past and move on. And that's the theme I got from it. What about you?
Well, you know, because Voyager is now Seven's collective, and, you know, there's a lot of like questioning, and people were not sure about Seven's allegiance, you know, like whether or not she's going to go back. And this, to me, just it brings out the lesson of the error that the U.S. government made with the Japanese Americans during World War II. Executive Order 90666, signed by President Roosevelt, said all Japanese Americans living on the West Coast must be relocated to these relocation centers. And they were horrible because of the fear of that every single Japanese American would assume that Japan was their loyalty. And it's not. Once you've made your once you're from a different place and you come to a new place and that becomes your collective, that is your collective. So that is the lesson to governments everywhere. If you have somebody who is now, you know, has, you know, they've chosen to become citizens of your country, that is your new collective. So really, overall, my lesson is just, you know, keep your emotions in check. Don't make rash decisions based on bad information.
I like it. Good. Okay. I have our Admiral and Captain average ratings here.
What is your rating before we go on and read theirs?
My rating. Now, this was an epic episode.
It was.
But it lacked the one thing that I always put as a priority, and that's the entire crew's involvement. You know, here we had a 2-hour movie and we hardly saw Neelix. We hardly saw B'Elanna. Tuvok had a few lines here and there. You didn't have much. I didn't have much. Like, they're just, it didn't feel to me like it involved the whole show in the way that gets a high mark for me. So I'm going to give this a 7.
Wow.
Give this a 7.
I felt that mostly everyone was used at some point or another. I like how feature filmy this was, how much it was the pacing, how quick it was, a lot of action, a lot of movement. So I'm going to give it an 8.2. I'm going to go higher. I am just because I really
8.2 and a 7. Yeah. Let's see what our admirals and captains say. The average of all of the ratings from all of our admirals and captains that participated, their number is 8.1.
Wow. Look at that.
8.1. Yeah, I was.
Oh, my goodness. You were close on the last one, but this one I got pretty close to.
Yeah, so, you were very close.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. All right. There we go. Dark Frontier. There you have it.
Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Join us next week when Robbie and I recap, discuss the episode, The Disease.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.